right now on the Daily Debrief.
You would have to believe that he is the most unluckiest man in the world.
The state argues the evidence has piled up and points towards guilt for the Iowa farmer accused of murdering his wife with a corn rake. Does the defendant's 911 call contain a confession?
It's a Hail Mary by the state.
Also, the woman accused of coaxing her boyfriend into committing suicide will not get out of jail early. And the case of a Florida man accused of killing a 9-year-old girl and asking his friend to lie about it. The Daily Debrief recaps the day in court. It's Friday, September 20th.
Welcome to the Debrief, everybody. Let's begin in Iowa for the trial of a husband accused of murdering his wife with a corn rake. Prosecutors say Todd Mullis plotted the crime after his wife had an affair. The motive, the state says, was property. If wife Amy Mullis left her marriage, she would keep a stake in the family farm. The defendant first said his wife died accidentally after falling on the corn rake, but the medical examiner found 6 holes in the wife's back. Corn rakes have only 4 prongs. Now the defendant is saying someone else must have killed his wife. The defendant took the stand. He said his son found his wife severely injured and yelled to get his attention.
And then he yelled really loud again, and then I ran over there. I don't remember him saying anything. He was more or less, "Mom." He was just kind of speechless. When I stepped in, I initially looked at Tristan, and I looked over, and I seen Amy hunched up, face down, laying next to the door, leaning against the door.
Did she have this corn fork stuck in her?
Yeah. I more or less just dove down by her. I put my head down. I was like, Amy. I was yelling at her, trying to get her attention. I didn't know what to think. I was just looking at her, and I picked her head up a little bit, and it was just nothing. It was no response. I just wanted to help her. I just wanted to, let's go to the hospital. Is there something wrong? Right now, I just reacted. Went under her, like her armpits, and I was trying to lift her up, and that fork handle was jabbing in the tote out the caging. I just reached over, I pulled the fork out, I tossed it, and I got underneath of her, and I told Tristan, go get the truck. We gotta go.
The last question the defendant's lawyers asked him was whether or not he killed his wife.
Todd, did you ambush your wife Amy in that shed that day and brutally beat her and chop her up with that corn fork?
No, I did not.
Do you know who did?
I have no idea.
On cross-examination, the prosecutor played Mullis's 911 call and forced the defendant to listen to the end of the call where he was performing chest compressions on his wife. The prosecutor claimed Mullis cursed his wife, but listen for yourself.
Todd, do you whisper cheating whore right there?
No.
So you don't remember what you whispered?
No.
Okay, I'm gonna play another clip for you. Do you know what you whispered there?
No.
Did you hear that? So I'm gonna play that part one more time. Right there, do you say, go to hell, cheating whore?
No.
So you don't hear that?
No.
You didn't hear at 6:53, cheating whore? You didn't hear that?
I didn't hear that word.
And it's right at that, after you hear a ping, you don't hear, go to hell, cheating whore?
No.
Our guests tonight are attorneys Janine Atamian and Michael Bryant. So Janine, what did you hear when you listened to that? Does he say that, or did the prosecution plant it in people's minds and now they all think they hear it? What is it?
I don't hear it, so I don't think so. Do you hear it?
I'm trying to listen to it through my little earpiece here. A bunch of us have been listening to it out in the newsroom. Michael Bryant, I mean, you know, does this effectively make this case all about what he said in that moment? Is the jury back there playing that one moment all over, trying to tell if that's the key answer in this whole mess of evidence that they've heard?
I'm sure it's forward, back, listening to it over and over again, because the prosecution did a great job, if nothing else, of planting that seed. I mean, I've listened to it myself, and know, we'll never have eating corn. We'll never watch any more porn. I don't know what is being said, but, you know, the seed's been planted. It could be devastating.
Janine, one of the things the defendant said is that when he tried to move his wife, the end of the rake was in the pet carrier that he had asked her to go get in this barn. And then when she didn't return with it after quite some time, it was about an hour, that's when the son went to look, and that's when the yell came out, and that's when the defendant says he went in, found her. Does that tell us anything? The end of the rake was somehow stuck in the pet carrier, and it made it hard to move her.
Well, he's trying to explain why he takes it out. I mean, and here's the thing. So did him taking that rake out act as something that exacerbated her injury and made her bleed out faster, you know?
Big questions here. Now, Michael, one of the questions that the defense asked the defendant, so this is direct examination, was, did you basically wait in ambush and chop her up? She wasn't chopped up with a corn rake. I mean, was that the proper way to even pose that question? Because that's not even what the evidence
is. No, I don't know why your own attorney would set up a scenario that makes it look like what you did, if you did it, was even worse than what you've been accused of doing.
Well, look, that's the classic straw man argument, Janine. Look, you set up an easier to refute position and then refute it. Is that what we saw there?
I don't think he had great counsel, so I don't think that the defense attorney is even thinking of that. You know, he just seems to be a little bit sloppy at his job.
We can keep going on and on about exactly what happened there in the defendant's interview. We're going to listen now to the defense fighting against that state suggestion that the defendant cursed his wife before she died.
He puts her in the pickup. He pulls the fork out of her back. He couldn't get her out the door with this dang thing sticking out of her body. What a horrible, horrible situation to be in. To lay her on the lap of his son, call 911 and drive as fast as he could, trying to get help. He's out of breath. He's doing compressions. He says, she's cold, she's cold. And he tells Thompson that as soon as Thompson steps up, she's cold. It just boggles the mind that you would be on 911 saying that. If you murdered your wife, and you're whispering, cheater, go to hell. You're going to do it on a 911 call? She's not saying that. And if you have trouble hearing it, you're going to have to let the court know. But it's, she's cold, and he's panting. She's cold. Listen, that is a Hail Mary by the state here, folks.
The defense gave up the theory, of course, that Amy died accidentally and said someone must have killed her, but that no one knows who. The state says nobody else was visible on the property and that too many pieces of evidence added up to guilt.
Unfortunately, we don't know what happened that day inside that shed. You know who knows? The defendant, because he was there that day in that shed with Amy, and he made sure the only other person that would be able to tell us isn't here. She's dead because of what he did. You would have to believe that it just so happens, when all these other things are going on, there is some mystery attacker out waiting on the Mullis farm. And it just so happens that no one hears a thing, not one word. And it just so happens that he makes that 911 call. It just so happens, with all of these other things, that he says she fell on a corn rake. It just so happens that when he is told that this is an accident, that he has no response because he's so taken aback. It just so happens. You would have to believe that he is the most unluckiest man in the world. No, because that's not the truth. Because every single one of these things shows that he did this.
Let's look back at some key evidence at this case, key points of testimony now. Back before she died, Amy Mullis texted her friend that she was, quote, done with her marriage. She said the defendant had told the wife of her lover about the affair that she was having.
I asked Amy if Todd wanted to get a divorce, and she said no, because only reason is he would lose half of everything, and it is socially unacceptable.
And did Amy indicate to you whether or not she was planning on working it out with Todd, or if she was done?
She said she was done. We talked about them making plans to get a divorce after Jerry's daughter graduated from high school. She said it was gonna hit the fan because Todd had called Jerry's wife. I told her that Jerry must have done a good job covering it up if his wife still didn't expect anything. We went on to have a conversation about that Todd gave her $1,500 to do whatever she wanted with it, and I suggested to her to save it for divorce fees. I asked her why she stayed. She said she was scared of Todd, and if he found out about wanting a divorce or an affair, that he would kill her. She told me, don't be surprised if Todd did something.
A sheriff's deputy recounted some of the internet activity believed to have come from the defendant.
When I hit that search bar to see the history that's on the device, I seen organs of the body was searched.
And when was that searched?
That was 4 days prior to the homicide. This is a visited site. So the visited site was truthaboutdeception.com, cheating and infidelity, stats about infidelity, cheating-wife.
Anytime these records say visited, that means that somebody would have clicked on those sites to look at them.
Correct.
And this was at 3:05 a.m., is that correct?
Yes.
And what was this visited site?
PsychologyToday.com, blog, Love and Sex in the Digital Age, Women Who Cheat Relationships. So it was six traits almost every cheating woman has. So it's love, sex, signs, women cheating, cheat, intelligent, clever, educated. 16 facts about cheating women. What did ancient cultures do to infidelity? Did ancient cultures kill adulterers? So this was www.nytimes.com. Punishment is 18 months for killing cheating wife. This one is www.baltimoreesun.com news. PH-AG murder trial opening, crimes of passion.
Now, the defendant denied that he was the one that made those searches. Remember, the defense says someone else killed Amy Mullis, but that it just wasn't the defendant. Investigators who reviewed surveillance footage from the family farm said other than the victim and the defendant, the only other person there was the couple's son.
So if she's getting attacked and she's trying to defend herself and she's getting defensive wounds to her hands, couldn't those fingernails have something to do with it or show us some evidence?
Again, the evidence in this case only shows two suspects. We don't have any other information that puts anyone else on that property.
When you decide this is the guy, there's no more looking around.
No, in fact, this is a 3.5 month investigation. It's, 40 plus interviews, 19 search warrants. We're, of course, always open to follow the evidence. That's what we're trained to do. And the evidence, as that investigation continues, always comes back to one person and one person only, and that's the defendant.
So the investigator wants this to sound like it's just a foregone conclusion of guilt. Let's bring everybody back in to discuss this. Michael Bryant, so the bottom line here is we needed a better question there. Okay, you didn't test the DNA under the victim's nails. Why not?
Yep, that would be a good start. I was really disappointed he was heading that direction, and then it fell off the table, and they never really reinforced in the closing, hey, this was a foregone conclusion. My guy was the guy. They never looked anywhere else.
Oh, yeah, we did all this work. We know it's him. Just trust us, trust us. Janine, you said you didn't like the job the defense counsel did. Is this just one more scrap of evidence in your book to bash the defense? What's the big picture issue here?
Yeah, so for me, again, it was a missed opportunity. So I think that Todd comes across pretty good on the stand. He gives good testimony. That was like the best part for him. I think that the searches are pretty damning, but his attorney didn't do anything to poke holes in any of it.
Michael Bryant, let's talk about those closing arguments. The prosecutor got really fired up on the rebuttal, saying, this guy must just be the most unlucky guy on the planet. And look, when you look at the state's evidence, it really does tell a story. And it tells a story because that key word, motive, they have a possible motive here. They have an alleged motive here. And oftentimes, juries really love that motive.
Oh, yeah. Two motives, really. The loss of the farm and the infidelity. I mean, those are two huge. I mean, those are Shakespearean, good old-fashioned cliche motives. They got either one they can use. And the fact is, in the absence of somewhere else to put the blame, he's going to get it.
Look, they know that the cameras weren't working, not just on that day, but other days. The security cameras there, Janine. So is it possible that somebody else could have gone in there some way, not be seen, not been heard, this sort of thing, and done something? It's possible, I guess.
It's possible. They could also be looking at the son. They could be looking at the wife of the man she was having an affair with. There's other possibilities. They don't poke holes in that at all.
This jury's had this case now for a couple of hours. We are monitoring that courtroom in Iowa to see if deliberations push into next week. Updates now on three national cases we are tracking here at Law and Crime. The New England Patriots have dropped Antonio Brown amid a series of sexual misconduct accusations. Brown is accused of rape in Florida, according to a civil suit filed in federal court by an athletic trainer. The same trainer accused Brown of exposing himself and trying to forcibly kiss her in Pennsylvania, but prosecutors there cannot charge Brown criminally because the Pennsylvania conduct falls outside a two-year statute of limitations in that state. More serious sex crimes in Pennsylvania fall under a 12-year statute of limitations. Nike has also dropped Antonio Brown as a brand sponsor. The young Massachusetts woman convicted by a judge of encouraging her boyfriend to kill himself will not get out of jail early. Michelle Carter is trying to convince the U.S. Supreme Court to reverse her conviction. Meanwhile, she asked to get out of her 15-month sentence after serving 7 months. The state parole board heard her argument yesterday, but today said she has not shown enough remorse. The wealthy Connecticut man out walking the streets on bail in the disappearance of his estranged wife must appear before a judge over concerns about his ankle bracelet. Authorities are reportedly worried that Fotis Doulos is not properly charging the batteries of the device which tracks his movements. Doulos' wife, Jennifer, has been missing since late May, and her family has said publicly that it fears she's dead. Prosecutors charged Fotis Doulos and his girlfriend, Michelle Traconis, of hindering prosecution and tampering with evidence. Still ahead here on The Debrief, a look to the trial starting Monday of a Dallas police officer accused of murder, plus the death penalty case of a Florida man accused of sexually assaulting and killing a 9-year-old girl. Law and Crime Network will provide live multi-platform coverage of the upcoming trial of Amber Geiger. She's the Dallas police officer accused of shooting and killing Botham Jean. Geiger went home, opened the door, saw Jean, and opened fire, thinking he was an intruder. Turns out she was in the wrong apartment. She shot and killed him in his own home and now will be tried for murder. Opening statements are Monday morning. And now to the death penalty trial of a Florida man accused of killing a 9-year-old girl. Felicia Williams disappeared in 2014 and her naked body turned up on a causeway in Old Tampa Bay. Defendant Granville Ritchie, who goes by Trevor, is accused of sexually assaulting the girl, beating her, and strangling her to death. Prosecutors say he put the girl's body in a suitcase to move it out of his house. The state's star witness in this case has been Ebony Wiley. After saying the victim went to pick up candy and never returned, she admitted lying to police. She then said she went out to get drugs for the defendant, and when she returned, the victim was gone and the defendant was nervous. That's when she said the defendant asked her to lie about what she observed. Here is how a detective described her police interview.
Making some strange sounds, making awkward movements with her body. She's very spiritual, so I don't know if that was something religious she was doing, but it was... It was a shock to her.
Was she making any noises?
Moaning noises.
Did she appear to be upset?
Yes, she did.
Right. Were you eventually able, after she calmed down, to interview her?
Yes.
But did she remain emotional throughout that interview?
At times during the interview, yes.
During the defendant's police interview, investigators did not know if the body recovered from the causeway across Old Tampa Bay was the body of the victim. Nonetheless, the defendant told them a story about what happens to people in Jamaica who harm children.
Not at that point, no.
And having not known what her injuries were or whether there was any sexual motivation to her homicide, had you or Detective Staley brought up anything to the defendant about molestation or sexual activity with Felicia?
No.
In fact, it was the defendant who talked about molesting a child and what happens to people who molest or sexually molest a child, wasn't it?
Yes.
And then he said, what happens to those people?
They throw them in.
They throw them in. Had you said anything to him about Felicia's body being removed from water?
No.
A state expert on sexual homicides testified about the victim's injuries, but did not perform the actual autopsy.
The body had multiple superficial injuries, that is, they didn't really go deep in the body, and those are distributed primarily across the front of the face and the chest, but all of those were post-mortem artifact. They happened after this girl was dead. There were other injuries that were external as well as internal that happened while she was alive. For example, she has some genital injuries. She had some injuries inside her throat. She had injuries to her shoulder, injuries to her middle back, several bleeds underneath her scalp. Again, those happened while she was alive. She also had some bleeding on the sides of her head that happened while she was alive. Those are associated with the strangulation injuries. She died as a result of manual strangulation.
Janine Atamian and Michael Bryant are here one final time. Janine, this is just a disgusting case. The facts are disgusting. The evidence is piling up against the defendant here.
The evidence is overwhelming. He is the last person that was with her when she was alive. You know, so to me, there's no chance that the jury's going to come back with anything other than guilty.
I tend to agree in this case. Michael Bryant, your thoughts looking at this. I know it's sort of been on the back burner because we've been paying so much attention to Todd Mullis. And that's more of kind of a what-if case. This is just a question of, look, you have accusations. You have a witness who lied, who then went and cooperated. And that witness did try to go look for the victim at some point, knowing that this may have been a lot bigger issue than perhaps she first realized.
Oh, I think guilt was setting in rapidly there. My problem with this case is that Ebony Wiley should be charged with something beyond the lying to cops. I mean, she's an accessory, in my opinion. She's, you know, child endangerment, something. What kind of moron leaves this 9-year-old with somebody she barely knows, takes some drugs, goes off to buy more drugs, and then comes back, oh, the kid's gone. I can't believe it. It's criminal.
Well, look, I mean, exactly what's the sentencing range for the charge that the cooperating defendant has? Is it possible she's going to get a deep penalty? And without her, can prosecutors even move forward with a serious case against Granville Ritchie? Because without her, they don't have testimony placing the victim with him.
Yeah, I would believe that once he's convicted, and I fully believe he will be, I can't see him getting off on this, she'll get a walk. I don't even think they're going to give her any time. She'll get a walk, and that's just wrong.
How so? I mean, ultimately, don't we want the most serious perpetrator to be the person who's serving the most serious time?
I think normally maybe that's true. In this case, for the reasons I mentioned, she's far more culpable than just lying to the cops.
Janine, quickly, do you agree?
I absolutely agree with him. I think she needs to be charged. And I also don't think they're going to necessarily let her walk. They haven't given her a deal yet. They're probably, you know, peppering her with "do well and we'll be, you know, kinder to you." But she hasn't gotten a deal yet.
Exactly. And many questions remain as to exactly how that will go. Appreciate the insight for you both. That's all the time we have here on The Debrief. We will be back on Monday at our usual time at 5 o'clock. Live coverage of these cases begins at 9 a.m.